I was born with the devil in me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer, no more than the poet can help the inspiration to sing. I was born with the evil one standing as my sponsor beside the bed where I was ushered into the world, and he has been with me ever since. And that is a quote from Herman Webster Mudgett, also known as H.H. Holmes, one of America's allegedly first serial killer, but we talked about this in our first episode. He is alleged to have killed 200 people in his lifetime. That's what, based on what historians think. I'm your host, Peter Hamill, and welcome to Wine About History. And today, we are drinking Bad Weather Brewing Company's Hop Cromancer Indian Pale Ale. I do like my pale ales. I've actually tried to I like Pilsners more than I like IPAs, but I thought we'd change it up. And this beer seemed perfect for discussing serial killers. In fact, I'm going to make it Serial Killer September. So today, if you haven't guessed, I'm alone. And that's mostly because erratic schedules sometimes lead to single episodes. So, back to H.H. Holmes. He was born into a wealthy farming family in Gilmanton, New Hampshire. As a boy, he showed signs of intelligence and an aptitude for medicine. And most contemporary evidence does not show the typical signs of a serial killer's childhood. You know, he didn't torture animals. He didn't manipulate other children. His father wasn't a violent person. So there really was no obvious evidence for why he should turn out this way. So we don't know a lot, but we do know a lot about his childhood, but I didn't think we'd dig into it here. In 1878, he married and had a son with Clara Loving, and he was apparently a good father to his children. He had more than one child in his life. He also had a daughter later on. And he went to a university in Vermont to study medicine, and then he got bored and went to the University of Michigan, where he did not do well. It was there that he learned to take out life insurance policies on soon-to-be-dead people, or take out fake life insurances on corpses, disfigure the corpses, say they were the person, and collect the money. And that was a very common scheme of his. You got to remember, in the 1890s, in that time period, latter third of the 19th century, you could basically do anything and anything you wanted. You know, you could, that's why so many people change your name. You could be John Francis Epcot, wanted for murder in Kansas City, moved to Abilene, Texas, say your name is Bill Symes, and never hear about it ever again, which is exactly what Herman did. He graduated in 1884 and moved to Chicago in 1886. He changed his name to H.H. Holmes and worked as a pharmacist in the Holton Drugstore. When the owner of the pharmacy passed, Holmes bought it from the owner's widow. She was never heard from again. So he just right away moves to Chicago, kills somebody. And he's definitely something that's known about psychopaths is they are the ultimate con man. They're ruthless con, many of them. I'm sure there are psychopaths that are in a way harmless. So after he became owner of the drugstore, he purchased an empty lot across the street and built the castle. That's what some neighbors had called it. He built and designed a three-story hotel. And in its construction, 1889, Holmes hired and fired a bunch of different crews so they wouldn't know what they were building. And what he didn't want people to know is that he was essentially designing a murder castle. For instance, he would have one section of the first floor be built by one crew, another built by the second, and then what he was doing, all sorts of stuff. One, for instance, he did is, this is how crafty and cunning he was. He would have a massive safe put in and then built a room around the safe. So it was fixed into the building, and he would nag on the payments. And then the owners of the safe that he, well, the company he bought it from said, hey, you haven't paid us, we want our safe back. And he said, fine, take it out. But if you hurt my building at all, I'm going to sue you for everything you're worth. So he would do things like, he was very, very, very crafty. As I said before, psychopaths really are the ultimate con men. So the castle grows, and when the construction was complete in 1891, he pasted ads in the newspapers offering jobs for young women and advised the castle as a hotel. And really what he did was create a murder castle. There were rooms that would be sealed airtight, and he would pump deadly gas in them. There were rooms that he would just suffocate people in. There was rooms that led nowhere and would trap you in. There was places that you would fall to your death. It was insane. There are blueprints of it online. I encourage you to look at them. So he also placed ads presenting him as a wealthy man looking for a wife. And it actually was in 1886 when he graduated that he married Murta Belknap, had a daughter with her, abandoned her, didn't divorce her. In fact, he just abandoned his wives. He never divorced any of them. And it was in 1894 that he married Georgina Yoke. So he had lots of employees, guests, and fiancés when wives were all required to take out life insurance policies. He would pay the premiums as long as they listed him as beneficiary. So these people would disappear, and then next thing you know, he has all this money from the beneficiaries. So just think about this. He's built a castle that has a conveyor belt of death and money. And many, many witnesses reported that they would see women go in and never come out of the castle. And its basement was essentially a medieval dungeon. There was dissecting tables. It was part dungeon, part rack. Because what he would do, another thing, one of his schemes, after he collected insurance on somebody, he'd destroy their body, rip it apart, dissect it, and then sell it as a skeleton to the local medical universities as a medical tool, medical teaching tool. So it was in 1893 that Chicago was given the honor of hosting the World's Fair, which was this massive event people used to do. I wish we still did it, where they would display culture, technology, everything that your country could offer you. Go there and have a big fair. And it was to celebrate the 400th anniversary of Columbus' discovery of America. So it was scheduled from May. I'm going to screw up my months here. So May, April, May, June, July, August, September, November. So it went on that long, and everyone from around the world would go there. And what's there at the very heart of it? Herman Webster Mudgett, H.H. Holmes, and his murder castle. Now, think about it this way. Well, this is why the book The Devil in the White City was written, because of this. And I would suggest you read it. I didn't read it preparing for this because I didn't want the author's words in my head. The castle also had stores, living quarters, over 100 rooms. Some of them were soundproof, by the way. So he would just have this, millions of people are coming to his city of residence, and it's just a conveyor belt of death. He's making tons and tons of money ruthlessly. And as I said before, insurance fraud scams were his bread and butter. And they were so good that when the World's Fairs ended, he left Chicago because its economy skyrocketed and then fell down as a result of the World's Fair leaving. So he had an accomplice, Benjamin Peitzel, who was a family man who was just an average criminal, did not know the demon that he was dealing with. He thought of H.H. Holmes as a brother, almost, according to some reports. You know, his children would call him Uncle Holmes, that sort of level of commitment. I don't remember if that's accurate, but that is the level of connection they had. And they were partners in a series of insurance scams that he would just traveled throughout the U.S. committing insurance frauds. This is why insurance fraud is so important. I wouldn't be surprised alone if H.H. Holmes' scams alone made the insurance industry change overnight. He did everything from stealing horses from Texas and selling them in St. Louis and then go back and make more insurance scams, come back. But the stealing horses in Texas and selling them in St. Louis got him in trouble. He was arrested and sent to jail. When he was in jail, he tried to concoct a new insurance crime with Marion Hedgepath, who was in the same cell as him. Now, the plan was pretty common for Holmes. He would take an insurance policy, fake his death for $10,000, and then Hedgepath, with $500, he would get a lawyer that would help him if any problems arose. And once Holmes was, the plan being, Marion would collect the $10,000, split it with Holmes. But the insurance company did not pay Marion because they were suspicious because all these scams are going on at the time. He was not alone in this, by the way. This kind of thing was very common. One instance of the durable Mike Malloy, he was an alcoholic, some barman took a life insurance policy on him. They kept trying to kill him. It didn't work until they just flat out murdered him. They would try to kill him by feeding him too many shots, that sort of thing. Well, he tried to do another one of these insurance scams in Philadelphia with Benjamin Peitzel, his friend. However, instead of Peitzel faking his own death, Holmes just killed him. And he collected all the money for himself. In 1894, Marion, he didn't get his money, and he was furious about it, so he told the police about the incident. The police found him in Boston, arrested him, and held him for the warrant in Texas. And at the time of his arrest, it kind of seemed like he was prepared to flee the country, and the police held on to him. So the suspicion is mounting. This guy is not, there's something wrong with this guy. He's insurance scam over here, horse thief over here. We're going to look at his castle. And that's where they found his murder dungeon in the basement, where some of the bodies were so rotted they couldn't even tell how many there were. And they realized just how evil he is. So they began to investigate everything. They're trying to figure out what's going on here, what's going on there. They start connecting the dots. And on the line, they found out he was in Toronto, Canada. And there in Toronto, they found the body of three of the Peitzel children who considered him family. He had stuffed them into a trunk. These are small children, by the way, not teenagers. Stuffed them into a trunk, filled it with gas, and let them asphyxiate. And the reason he was able to do this is because the Peitzel family trusted him so much. When the trial came, Mrs. Peitzel told the judge and jury about what happened, that her son, that his husband, for all of his flaws, was a good man who did bad things to protect his family. That she gave she let Holmes take care of these children because she trusted him so much. And then he killed them. And while she's recounting this story, the judge is crying, the jury's crying, the bailiff is crying. Holmes is doodling on a legal pad. So he confessed to 28 other murders. However, based on what we think happened, historians, better historians than me, think happened, he is believed he's responsible for up to 200 murders. In May 1896, he was hanged. The castle was remodeled as an attraction named Holmes Horror Castle. However, an arsonist burned it to the ground. Before he died, Holmes sold his story for $10,000 to the newspaper magnate. Oh, his name is on the tip of my tongue. Hearst, the newspaper magnate Hearst. And actually, he has descendants to this day. There's actually a bunch of very interesting. His body was recently exhumed by one of his descendants, who's just absolutely horrified to be related to him. And there is evidence that they are related because he did have children. So that's a good reason to all never. First off, if anyone says, "Let me take a life insurance policy out on you," be careful. So the takeaway from this is that evil can come from anywhere. You know, the family friend, your husband, the nice friendly pharmacist down the street. So next episode, we're having our annual 9/11 special. And after that, we're covering another serial killer, a pair of serial killers, Burke and Hare, who were a famous pair of, well, they weren't just serial killers, but we'll cover that in the next episode. And remember, without history, you wouldn't be here.